Okay, Dr. Salmon, I think we now move to oral argument. Liz?
Sure. If I could call Valerie Thompson and Thomas Delina or Whitney Wilder. Okay, great. This is Christine Smith versus Baltimore County Board of Education. I believe, Whitney, you will go first, representing Ms. Smith. You'll have 10 minutes. You can reserve some of that time if you wish to do rebuttal, but you need to tell me how much you'd like to reserve.
I reserve
2 minutes. 2 minutes? Okay, great. Thank you very much, and you can begin when you're ready.
Welcome. Thank you.
I'm sorry, I'm Whitney Wilder, and I'm here on behalf of Christine Smith. This isn't a...
Whoa. It's still on.
Wow.
Is it on? Is this okay?
Is that,
okay,
is that
thank
picking
you.
Up?
This is an appeal pursuant to the Maryland Code Annotated Education Article 4205 because the superintendent's decision to unilaterally violate the settlement agreement that it entered into with Ms. Smith was an arbitrary, unreasonable, and illegal decision. Superintendent Dr. Dallas Dance unilaterally changed Ms. Smith's salary grade, salary scale, and collective bargaining unit, and this was a violation of the settlement agreement entered into with Ms. Smith July 2014. Maryland employs an objective theory of contract interpretation, and when a contract is ambiguous or silent as to material terms, as this board already found that it was in its opinion number 1649, the court, or in this case the board, will examine extrinsic evidence that existed at the time the contract was entered into in order to resolve that ambiguity or to determine the silent issue. The overriding principle in contract interpretation is to effectuate a reasonable and fair construction of the contract. As this board found that this agreement was susceptible to more than one interpretation, the board must consider the fairness of one given result versus the other. And in considering the fairness of a given result, the court will consider if one interpretation leads to hardship. And when finding that one interpretation leads to hardship, the court has strong grounds to find that such a result was not intended by the party. The ALJ's opinion, we respectfully request that you do not follow. It did not consider the hardship of the interpretation it took of the contract. And that would be specifically that by determining that Ms. Smith entered into this contract to allow her salary to be set at some time in the future, which resulted in a detriment to her of $20,000, that is a clear hardship which must be considered. This December, it will be almost 5 years since Ms. Smith began this matter. That is an incredible length of time. Two things have been consistent during that period. Ms. Smith has maintained her innocence for the underlying allegations, and Ms. Smith has adamantly said she would not have entered into this contract if the salary was not at grade 13. She would not have taken a $20,000 salary loss. When looking at a contract and the intent of the parties and entering into it, you consider the reasonableness of the part, or excuse me, use the reasonable person standard. Ms. Smith is certainly a reasonable person, and a reasonable person would not take a $20,000 salary loss and would not enter into a contract for their salary to be determined at some point in the future, especially not an employee who has been wrongfully accused and maintains her innocence to this day. Finding that a contract for employment, especially, could contain future terms. When that contract doesn't explicitly use those future terms, that is a hardship, and that does not meet with the fair and reasonable standards that the board should use in interpreting a contract. There's overwhelming evidence on the record, a very lengthy record, to support Ms. Smith's position that the position she was accepting was grade 13 on the case salary scale. This was the understanding she had when she entered into the agreement. Specifically, there is a exhibit that was Smith Hearing Examiner's Exhibit Number 2, a letter from Ms. Smith's attorney to the Baltimore County Public Schools setting forth Ms. Smith's understanding of the position, and it states Ms. Smith will apply for the position posted by Dale Ramzan, again using the past tense, and the salary will be commensurate with an administrator salary. That was sent on May 15th, 2014, before the settlement agreement was entered. Letter goes on to state, if this is the offer, Ms. Smith is agreeable. At no point in all of the communication that Ms. Smith's attorney had with Baltimore County Public Schools did they write back, no, the position hasn't been set. No, the position will be reclassified. No, the position is not finalized. Never. Baltimore County Public Schools has several times pointed to this, what they call a draft class specification code. But to be fair, it doesn't say draft. And at no point was it said this is only a draft. What they point to, by they I mean Baltimore County Public Schools, is the word TBD in the title code. Everything else is filled in on that job classification. And importantly, that job classification was the only thing shown Ms. Smith before she entered the settlement agreement. For the first time, after this appeal had started, Ms. Smith was shown a what is called the final job classification before the hearing examiner. When Ms. Smith received the August 11th letter from Herman James regarding the salary for her position, she immediately objected. There are several letters from her counsel in the record saying, whoa, this is not what we agreed to. I'm paraphrasing, of course. At no point did Ms. Smith's counsel, or did anyone from Baltimore County Public School receive this quote-unquote final job classification. If this really was to be set in the future and this was everyone's agreement, why was this not provided at that time? Why was it not provided until the hearing examiner's hearing? That was the first time Ms. Smith had seen that document. The ALJ made a finding that counsel's correspondence was veiled in an innuendo. But this is not supported by the record, and this is not reasonable. The letters reference telephone calls and other type of communications that obviously are not attached. This was an ongoing settlement negotiation, and to find that somehow the terms of the salary weren't negotiated specifically is not reasonable, and it's not fair. As further evidence that Ms. Smith and her attorney and Baltimore County Public Schools intended the agreement meant the position would be determined in the future, I'd point to Ms. Smith's letters, the hearing examiner exhibits 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 15, 16, and 17. They're all correspondence between Ms. Smith's attorney and counsel for Baltimore County Schools following Ms. Smith's execution of the agreement. And yet, this final classification is never provided in that, nor is it said this was subject to further review or subject to a reclassification. That's never said. No correspondence ever mentions the reclassification not being complete, and it doesn't mention that the agreement was for Ms. Smith to accept a position in the future. As I mentioned, the final job classification was provided to Ms. Smith for the first time before the hearing examiner on February 17, 2016. But this isn't the first time in this case that Baltimore County produced documents conveniently at the last minute. Before the Office of Administrative Law hearings, Baltimore County produced a final approved reclassification of reserve. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Thompson.
I appreciate the opportunity to be here today and speak with you on behalf of the Board of Education of Baltimore County. Throughout this matter,
your microphone, please.
Better? Thank you. Throughout this matter, Ms. Smith has adamantly asserted that the salary of her new position was of paramount importance. Despite this, salary is not a term in the settlement agreement that she signed. a specific salary is not identified in the correspondence from her counsel. And in fact, as Ms. Wilder indicated, the administrative law judge in this case described that correspondence from Mr. Tom DeLina as purposely, quote, veiled in innuendo, end quote. And Ms. Smith, admittedly, never made inquiry of the Department of Human Resources regarding her salary, despite testifying that HR, and only HR, not her supervisor, Dale Ronzon, had the ultimate say in the classification of the position. The reason for this, as articulated by the ALJ in this case, is that the position and its pay had not been approved at the time that the settlement agreement was executed. Ms. Smith did not present any new evidence at the hearing before the ALJ. Instead, she reiterated what was presented to the local board's hearing examiner, calling the same two witnesses and producing the same testimony and introducing only one new exhibit for consideration by the ALJ. What Ms. Smith did clearly establish was that she made assumptions. She made assumptions about the classification of her position based upon her discussions with Mr. Ronzon. Thus, her intent, which is what this board is seeking clarification on, is supported only by representations made by a person who was not qualified to do so, a person who was not a part of the settlement negotiations, nor a member of the Department of Human Resources. Since Ms. Smith did not offer any new evidence, this board is in the same position that it was prior to referring the case to the Office of Administrative Hearings. There is no new information from Ms. Smith presented for your consideration. In contrast, the local board presented two entirely new witnesses and three new exhibits to establish its intention at the time of the execution of the settlement agreement. And to Ms. Wilder's point, indeed, this was the first time that these documents had been produced. And why was that? Because at the hearing before the local board's hearing examiner, BCPS took the position that the terms in the settlement agreement were not ambiguous. So there was no need to produce any type of paperwork because that was not the argument that was being advanced. So it is not fishy, if you will, that this was produced at the hearing before the administrative law judge. The whole point of that hearing was to introduce new evidence to help establish the intent because this board found that there was, in fact, a material dispute of fact regarding the intent of the parties. The testimony and the documents before the ALJ show that the term regarding salary and assignment within the settlement agreement is consistent with the HR operating procedures for reassigning administrative and supervisory personnel to positions of a lower pay grade. The exhibits demonstrate that the vacancy reclassification form was processed in the ordinary course of business and that the form received from Mr. Ronzon himself on July 23, 2014, listed the grade as a 10 on the Organization of Professional Employees, OPE, pay scale. This completely contradicts Mr. Ronzon's testimony at both the hearing before the local board's hearing examiner and before the ALJ, in which he indicated that he had no knowledge that the position was not on the Council of Administrative and Supervisory Employees case pay scale. It was contradictions like this, among many others, that led the ALJ to conclude that Mr. Ronzon was not a credible witness, a finding that appellant's counsel disputes, but is clearly supported by specific examples within the transcript. In fact, Judge Chapman devoted nearly three pages of her opinion to what she characterized as Mr. Ronzon's, quote, curious and unpersuasive, end quote, testimony. In cases too numerous to mention, this very board has deferred to the trier of fact's credibility determinations because it recognizes that the trier of fact is in the best position to judge a witness's truthfulness, as he or she has seen, heard, and been present with the witness firsthand. Ms. Smith has not pointed to any independent evidence in the record to support a reversal of Judge Chapman's finding that Mr. Ronzon was incredible. The testimony also demonstrated that BCPS never intended to compensate Ms. Smith on the case salary scale because the newly created position was not eligible for such placement. It did not have direct contact with students. It did not develop curriculum, and it did not supervise instruction. The testimony, and specifically the cross-examination of both Ms. Smith and Mr. Ronson, demonstrated that the position in the Office of School Safety was vastly different than that of a principal. Ms. Smith had little, if any, supervisory authority, and her responsibilities were wholly unrelated to that of an administrator. The two positions aren't comparable, and the salaries assigned to them reflect that. The testimony elicited from the school system employees indicates that the intent of the system was to enter into an agreement that resolved Ms. Smith's disciplinary matter in a way that was consistent with its own procedures. That meant creating a position through the normal channels and reassigning Ms. Smith to that position in a manner consistent with HR's operating procedures. Ms. Smith did not introduce any new evidence to suggest the school system intended to approve a position outside of the normal vacancy reclassification process or offer a salary scale at odds with Comar. Ms. Wilder talks about hardship and the fact that Ms. Smith would never have taken a $20,000 reduction in salary. Respectfully, this was a settlement agreement executed in lieu of termination proceedings against Ms. Smith. So in fairness, that hardship could have been much more severe had the parties not entered into a settlement agreement. Moreover, when Ms. Wilder talks about a reasonable person who's negotiating a settlement position and negotiating a settlement agreement for a new position deals with HR. She doesn't rely upon her supervisor, who's not in a position to approve the final position, for what the salary and the salary scales will be. And indeed, Judge Chapman recognized that perhaps Ms. Smith signed this agreement a little prematurely. Perhaps she should have done her homework, or perhaps her counsel should have investigated a little more into this position. So when Ms. Wilder talks about a reasonable person, you need to keep those things in mind. Ms. Wilder has also talked about overwhelming evidence. And again, I respectfully point you to the fact that this board referred this matter to the Office of Administrative Hearings so that new evidence could be produced. And new evidence was produced by the local board, and not by Ms. Wilder and Ms. Smith. And it is their burden to show that this decision was arbitrary, unreasonable, or illegal. I would respectfully request that you adopt the findings of fact, the conclusion of law, and the recommendations issued by Judge Chapman in this matter. And I thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Ms. Wilder?
Yes. Ms. Thompson brought up the new evidence that was produced before the OAH, and she states that it's not fishy. But it absolutely is, because if this was so clear, and this was so the intent of all of the parties, everybody knew that this was to be set in the future, why not produce that at some point before 2017, at some point during this process? Why hide the ball on that if it was so clear? Dale Ramzan testified he never used electronic signatures, and that was because he got in trouble, actually, with the law office for using it. He also testified the document with his electronic signature he had never seen before. Again, if this was so clear, if this was a document that he had, this was a document that he signed, why was it not just produced before? Ms. Thompson mentioned credibility. She specifically mentioned the credibility of Dale Ramzan. And I understand what the ALJ found. However, I don't want you to focus on that. I want you to focus on Ms. Smith's credibility, which has been consistent throughout this process. Ms. Thompson's correct. Only one new document was produced before the OAH. But there are two reasons for that. One, Ms. Smith's position has been consistent throughout this process. She maintained her innocence and wouldn't have taken the settlement agreement if it had it had resulted in a $20,000 loss of salary. That's a reasonable person. Ms. Smith has been above board. No one has been able to challenge her testimony on that. In addition, Ms. Smith can't produce what she doesn't have. Again, these documents are held by Baltimore County Public Schools. We didn't know about the final job classification until the hearing examiner's hearing, and we didn't know about this vacancy reclassification finalized form until the Office of Administrative Hearings. We can't produce evidence that we don't have. Ms. Smith suggested that counsel could have investigated more, asked more questions. Counsel did ask questions. I already read that letter in May 2014, but I'll remind you that this started in December 2012, long before the settlement agreement was entered into. Thank you, respectfully.
Thank you both very much.
Questions?
Yeah, any questions from members of the board? No? Okay, very good. Thank you so much for
coming
in.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.